potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Morbius, You Won't Be Alone, The Contractor, Better Nate Than Ever, and Moon Knight. I'm also going to be talking about some news and the trailer park and the home cinema roundup featuring Rick and Morty seasons 1 through 5. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Of course, the big news that has been dominating the entertainment world this week has been the Oscar slap. The slap heard around the world. It's so clever. First of all, there's no excuse for the hitting. And that goes all the way back to grade school. There's no excuse for physical violence if you're not threatened with actual physical violence. And no, insults are not a form of violence. I've seen that out there too. Oh, well, making fun of somebody and humiliating them is a form of violence. No, it's not. Violence, by definition, involves physical harm. Like, on a legal definition. That's absolutely what you're going to see. Or a threat of physical harm. But no. Insulting is not a violence. Don't you remember sticks and stones may break my bones? We've been taught this stuff since we were little kids. And gotta remember, these guys are in their 50s. But there's a huge split in our population right now where there are some people who think it's justified. No, it's not. It's not okay to hit somebody just because they insult you, especially if you're in a paid venue where that's what your job is. I don't care how insensitive the joke is, you don't hit. And kudos to Chris Rock and the Academy. I think that they actually handled it well because Chris Rock, he saw it coming. I'm not saying it was planned, but when he saw Will Smith come on stage like that and walk at him, he can read people and he knew he was going to get attacked. And you see, he just braced down and took the hit. Because if he would have blocked it or moved away, then Will Smith likely could have started chasing him and tackled, and then it could have gotten really ugly. And the Academy, actually, as news has come out this week, the Academy had actually asked him to leave the ceremony. And he refused. Well, what do you do then? They could have had security come and drag him out. But how would that have looked? Or the optics of that? Or they could have had the LAPD come in and arrest him. But that would have been even worse. I think it was smart that the Academy said, let's just let this play out, and we will deal with it later. That was good on their part, because sometimes if you're in a bad situation, it's best to just get out of that situation and then deal with the consequences later. But the other thing I want to call BS on are all these people out there going, what are we talking about these celebrities for? It's just rich people hitting rich people. What about the Ukraine? What about this? What about that? It's used to distract. No. First of all, two things. A, we can focus on more than one news story at a time. Just because Chris Rock got hit in the face does not mean that people aren't worrying about Ukraine. I mean, look at any news feed out there. It's good. Yeah, it had some Will Smith and Chris Rock stories, but it also had plenty of talking about the Ukraine. Who wasn't talking about Ukraine on Monday? We were just also talking about this. But also, B, this is a conversation that needs to be had in this society because there are so many people who thought it was justified and or okay, and some people that are doggone just cheering it on. This was not some barbecue on the weekend where people had a little bit too much to drink. It's not people coming to a bar on the way home and sort of offending somebody, a stranger that they don't know about. They were at work. Both of them were paid to be there. We'll tell you, I'll point you to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He summed it up perfectly. He summed up the ethical considerations. He summed up the image considerations. He summed up the racial considerations. He broke this thing down perfectly. Read what Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wrote about this. You can find it anywhere on Facebook. That guy nails it because you need to rise above this. By the way, this was a premeditated thing. This wasn't like they were both up there giving an award, doing a presentation, and then Chris Rock drops a joke, and then Will Smith hits him just out of reflex. No, he had to get up out of his seat, go over to the stairs, walk up the stairs, go across the stage, and there was a good amount of stage between the two men, and then hit the guy, and then refuse to leave, and then go on to make a Academy Awards acceptance speech all about love and apologizes to everyone except Chris Rock. So no, this was 100% intentional, and at no point was he sorry. Imagine the power if Will Smith would have done the same thing, walked up to Chris Rock, put his arm around him and said, hey man, I know you get paid to make jokes, but my wife has a medical condition. And that just isn't cool. So be better. And then walked back down and taken the seat. He would have looked like a king. And he would have made Jada look like a queen. And it would have completely diffused anything Chris Rock could have come back with. Consider that, because then you will realize the power of words and why a civilized person would actually do that. That's real strength. Because there's two different types of people in this world. There are some that will look at that as a show of strength, and some people who will look at that as a show of weakness. And I'm not talking about physical strength. Yeah, sure, Will Smith is physically larger than Chris Rock. He can probably beat him up really easily. Physical strength, that exists, but real strength is power and the ability to do something without flexing your own muscles. And the words would have made that powerful. So what Will Smith did was a show of weakness. It's weak in character and weak in desire and weak in ability to control your own self. What's really clear about this is they're in a huge abusive relationship, Jada and Will Smith. And I can't imagine what a nightmare Jada would have been if he had to go home to that. I mean, when you look at like Jaden Smith's tweet where he's like, "That's how we do it." Oh, really? How many times did you get hit in the face as a kid? That's not appropriate. That's not how you deal with people. That's not how you should be dealing with things as a parent. I mean, this isn't a discussion on whether or not to spank a kid with a little pat on the butt through diapers. I'm talking about smacking somebody in the face. They're an abusive relationship and they both need help. And it's been pouring out. And right now we are in the Mel Gibsonification of Will Smith, where suddenly everybody realizes he may not be the nicest guy on the planet and suddenly realize he's got some issues. Because that didn't protect anyone. Oh, it protected his wife. No, it didn't. It didn't protect her. She is under the gun now. There are more jokes about her baldness and her looks than I have ever seen in my entire life. So that's all I got to say about this. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is something that's coming to Disney Plus, and that is Ice Age Scrat Tales. Take a listen to this trailer. This drops on April 13th, so just a couple weeks, and they're short films about Scrat, you know, the little saber-toothed squirrel who finds out he's got a kid or ends up with a kid. I don't know how. They don't explain that kind of biology in cartoons. But I remember saying once when the Ice Age sequels were coming out, and they were like sequel 26 or whatever, and I said I'd watch an entire movie about Scrat. Now, these are a bunch of short films. I think there's six of them. They look very funny. I love Scrat. Scrat, to me, I still consider as the heart and soul of the Ice Age movies. And I will watch these with great pleasure. I'm looking forward to these. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Top Gun Maverick, which comes to theaters on May 27th, I think.
We're going into combat on a level no living pilot's ever seen.
Not even him.
You think up there you're dead. Believe me.
My dad believed in you. I'm not gonna make the same mistake.
Someone's not coming back from this.
Those are your pilots. Anything happens to them, you'll never forgive yourself.
I've never been a big fan of the first Top Gun movie. I did not like it. I thought it was dumb. I thought it was all icing and no cake. So I'm not dying to see this one. Can we just dial back on the machismo in movies for once? So, I guess it's going to look cool. And Tom Cruise is in a jet. In a real jet. Haha. And that's the sale point. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about You Won't Be Alone and The Contract. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about the first film I don't have a trailer for, and I'll explain why. But the story is about a young woman who's turned into a witch and lives over several lifetimes in early century rural Macedonia. The reason this doesn't have a trailer is it's in Macedonian. And yeah, I can play a trailer in the trailer park of Scrat and his offspring just going through the whole trailer. You can actually honestly understand what they're saying. They just may not be speaking English. But you listen to that trailer, you kind of get an idea of what's going on. No, I don't speak Macedonian, and I don't want to explain to all of the affiliates why and what every line that is uttered in this trailer in Macedonian means. That's why I generally don't play trailers in a foreign language on the radio. Nobody knows if it's saying anything offensive. And, you know, I don't want somebody who happens to speak Macedonian and said, oh, they said something pretty raunchy on the radio the other day. So that's why you don't get a trailer. But this is a very much a cerebral movie. It's in Macedonian, which I think it's got about a million people who speak Macedonian in the world. So it's going to be subtitles for most of the people who are going to get a chance to see this movie. It stars Noomi Rapace, who you, of course, will recognize from the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and she was in Prometheus. She had a bunch of American movies. She came out in The Splash about 10 years ago, and her career has slowed down a little bit. But I've always enjoyed her. I think she's one of those actors that'll do anything. She'll go completely bonkers in a movie if you need it, which is kind of cool. I mean, I respect that in an actor. This film, though, it starts off with this woman in this rural area, and there's apparently a witch in the woods who wants her daughter and marks her daughter, and then she tries to hide the daughter away from the witch, but eventually the witch gets her, and the daughter turns into a witch, and you know, and she's able to shapeshift and turn into different people and take over forms, but it's not done in a very a sensational way. It's shot without really much special effects, which is cool. I mean, I appreciate that. Not every time something magical or otherworldly happens in a movie should it be involved with a glowing blue light and digital effects. I do think it's neat that they're able to affect these changes and this morphing that she does, turning into a different person. I think that's actually very cool how they do that. And they do it with some contortions and some camera angles. And there's certain effects of, you know, prosthetics, because the witch has these long fingernails. It's an interesting look and stuff, but it feels kind of like if you took the movie The Witch, if you remember that one with Anya Taylor-Joy, and you told a different version of that story, but in the same atmosphere, but Terrence Malick directed it. That's the best way I could describe the film You Won't Be Alone. Because Terrence Malick is a very artistic and drawn out filmmaker, and he does all this almost a stream of consciousness, and there's no direct dialogue back and forth. But in this one, it's just her going through different lives, and you know, at one point she's a man, and another time she's a woman, and then sometimes she's full on witch, and she sometimes lives in the woods, and she's discovering sex, and she discovers sex is what it's like from a woman's point of view and a man's point of view. So they're, you know, it changes around and stuff. So it is that sort of, either stream of consciousness or patchwork or mosaic filmmaking of a story rather than a traditional arc with dialogue and conflict and characters. So it's sort of meant to be, you know, you're sort of pragmatically living with this witch and experiencing it with her, but there's no real, I don't want to say there's no point to it, but there's no plot line to go through. There's no MacGuffin to get them through the film. And it makes it interesting, but you know, it's a bit tiresome to watch. And it's in Macedonian, so you know, it doesn't exactly start off with a huge audience base. It's interesting enough for, you know, consideration, but I'm still going to have to say it kind of sucks just because it just goes on even beyond when you get the point of the movie. So it's not my cup of tea.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the movie The Contractor. Chris Pine plays an Army veteran who takes a job as a private contractor only to see his job go awry and him question the ethical nature of the people calling the shots.
You're leaving the Army with an honorable discharge, but you're losing your pension and health care.
We gave them our minds, our bodies, and our spirit. And they chewed us up and spit us out.
We operate in a deep black OGA offshoot with direct presidential authority.
Bank some decent cash, put a down payment on the house.
It's not dangerous.
You don't understand what you're doing. I'm trying to save lives. This is only about money.
What do we do, Mike?
This is told from the point of view of a former member of the military. And it falls in that realm of military movies. I talked about this a little bit back when Dog came out. You know, the Channing Tatum movie where he was dealing with a service dog from the military. Whenever you make a movie that is even marginally about the American soldier, recently there's been an ongoing effort to try and tell it from their point of view, and also just almost from their cultural point of view, sort of middle American, salt of the earth, oftentimes coming from lower income, you know, sort of red state flyover country style. And I can appreciate it, and I think that that's absolutely valid, and that should be. But it gets exhausting when that's applied to any movie about the military. That's why when you have movies like the James Bond movies where they get too much into his character, you're just like, oh, just tell the story about the spy with the action and the explosions and the cars. This movie doesn't know if it's trying to be that direct action movie or if it's trying to deconstruct the plight of the American soldier. And so it falls into these I'm back home hoorah cliches of brotherhood and that level without earning it necessarily. You don't feel like a movie like The Outpost that came out a couple years ago, that you really felt like you were in on their experience, at least in the movie. So it just didn't feel tacked on. And this feels tacked on. And it does open up an interesting question about when you go from being in the military. Not that militaries are not given, at times, problematic orders, and not to say they aren't put in difficult situations, and not to say that there can be debate on whether the actions of the military were warranted, but it's not the soldier's fault. The soldiers are following orders. And in that sense, the soldier can be like, well, I've sworn allegiance to the flag and the military and the president, so if I get these orders, I got to go do them. When you deal with a contractor or a mercenary, it gets into a really gray area. And in this movie, that's the problem, is they fall into this gray area and, you know, they play around in the gray area, but you do wonder, when you sign up for something like this, is it going to be ethical? And when it does go wrong, how bad can it go wrong? And one of the things that bothered me about this movie was when the mission goes awry, it really goes awry. And I look at it and I go, I'm not a soldier, but I'm not some strategic military strategist, but I wouldn't have done that. That seems like a big mistake. And it becomes out of control too quickly for the sake of having an action movie. And it's unclear kind of even what the message is through this. And the choices he makes sometimes end up extremely bad for everybody, and they aren't good choices, but we're supposed to still like him as a hero. So I think the movie opens up some doors and doesn't actually either go through them properly or leaves them open, or, you know, the door handle breaks off. I don't know. It just, that metaphor fell apart. But anyway, so did the contractor as a movie. So I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Morbius and better Nate than ever. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Morbius. This is the only wide movie that's opening in theaters this week. Good luck. A sickly Jared Leto uses ultimate argle-bargle science to accidentally turn himself into a vampire superhero.
Dr. Michael Morbius, you've been missing for 2 months. Then you were found on a container ship that washed up off of Long Island. What did you do to yourself, Doctor?
I wish I knew.
I went from dying to being more alive than ever.
It worked.
Not exactly.
I have increased strength and speed.
I
some form of bat radar.
And what's the hunt?
And consume blood.
Okay. I knew what to expect when this movie was coming up because they didn't screen it locally for me, and they screened it out of town, but they screened it out of town literally 24 hours before you could go buy a ticket for it. That's a bad sign. Like when they screened The Batman, they screened that like 2 weeks early. Same thing with like Spider-Man. So these movies they know are going to do well and play well with the audience, they screen pretty early because they want to get some buzz generated about it. And I like to go in with an open mind, but I'll tell you, man, the second this movie started, I was like, this makes no sense. It starts off with them, I mean, literally within the first line or two is garbage science. They're talking about vampire bats and how they're stronger and they can take down a buffalo or something. I'm like, no, they can't. Vampire bats are very small, and vampire bats bite an animal and they drink the blood and then they fly away. They do not attack people and skeletonize them. And then the science just gets worse. And it's one thing when you have a science behind a movie. The science has to work at the very least within the frame of the comic book. I mean, Iron Man's total nonsense. You know, like, oh, Iron Man, when he gets captured, he's put in a cave and he builds this super suit. There's no way you could do that. But at least, I mean, you put the story together where you're like, this is like one of the smartest guys on the planet, and he runs a company that makes all this technology, and he knows how the technology works, and he's a genius inventor. And so then he takes all these weapons that are designed to fly already and builds a supersuit out of them. And I'm like, okay, I can buy that. I mean, it's nonsense, but I can buy it. But there's a scene in there where at one point they can't get to their lab. He goes, we got to go find another lab. And they find a counterfeit money lab. And you don't just need a lab. You need the right equipment and the computer and the processing and the program. And it's not like I just need a lab. Any lab. A high school chemistry lab? Okay, well, we'll go there. And the story, you know, I use the term argle-bargle science. That's what it is. It's like, oh, the science does this and that and the other. And like, there's things that happen. There's like plot points that are critical to the development of the story. That makes no sense. Like in one point, they have to do this experimentation in international waters, ostensibly because it violates conventions and stuff. And so they get these mercenaries on a ship, and the mercenaries are like ready to shoot them. And you're like, don't you pay these people? I mean, that's what mercenaries do. And there's no reason for them to do that. And then he kills them. It just makes no sense. And the cinematography, it's all dim and hard to watch. And there are scenes, it's so dark. There are scenes with the effects and him flying around. I honestly couldn't figure out what's happening. I lost track of what was happening on screen because it was so overdone with visual effects. And the cinematography and the look of the movie was so dark, I couldn't resolve on the screen what's going on. And then on top of it, the story doesn't make any sense. I mean, there was a scene where these police break into a place. I have no idea why they're there. And they just keep looking around. And I'm like, can you let the audience in on what's going on? I mean, if you want the scientific structure and plot point creativity of Birdemic, this movie's for you. And then he's like, I got these powers of the bat. I got echolocation. And he starts using it. And I'm like, that's not echolocation. Echolocation is sending out a signal and then having to come back. No, in this one, he just had good hearing. That's not echolocation. Echolocation is not good hearing. Echolocation is sending out a signal and then being able to find out where you are. Daredevil has echolocation. And they actually describe that in the movie and the TV show, and that's marginally acceptable. And he's like, and he can fly. But he doesn't fly with wings. He just sort of flies with monster air, like this giant vampire fart that takes him across New York City. The movie doesn't make any sense. Oh my gosh. And then also digital effects. They're twice they use within one scene, digital blood splattering on the camera. I mean, didn't that effect go out like 10, 15 years ago? Why are we still putting digital blood splattering on a camera? It is one of the, I mean, you might as well have had it all be a dream at the end. And then speaking of the end, I won't give away anything, but you get to the end credit sequences and they're like, we're going to just desperately reach for straws here and try and tie this into something else in the Spider-Man universe. Oh, this is not a good movie. And it was telegraphed from the very first trailer. So Morbius, keeping in line with the theme of vampires, totally sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Better Nate Than Ever. A misfit tween boy from Pennsylvania sneaks away for the weekend with his best friend to audition for a part in a Broadway production.
I've got some breaking news. It's an open audition. They're making Lilo and Stitch a Broadway musical.
Where would we even sleep? What about your aunt, the Broadway actress?
You are the only toddler whose first word was me.
Let's cast a musical. Does anyone have a special skill they'd like to demonstrate?
I can do Fiddler on the Roof style knee crawls.
This I have to see.
Mazel tov! Oh my gosh, my pants! Does anybody have any extra shorts?
This is on Disney Plus, and it's based on the best-selling book, Better Nate Than Ever. Tim Federline, who directed it, it's not autobiographical. It's semi-autobiographical because it's kind of about his character, about who he was when he was in middle school. He loved Broadway, and he loved the fabulous nature of it, and he was a bit of a misfit for it. He got teased, he got bullied. It took him a while to find his people. And so this tells the story of, I don't know if he actually did this, like tried to go to audition, but that's what the story is about. And, you know, I got this, kind of just came into my inbox, and I was like, oh, Disney sent me the screener, I better go watch it. And I started watching it, and I got very annoyed with it very quickly, because the kids a bit much. And part of it is, you know, my kids were in theater. My two oldest were in theater, and they really got into it, and so I know theater kids. And this kid was a little much for theater kids. He's really over the top. But you know what? Once you kind of just settle into the character, and you get him to New York, it becomes a sweet little story. I mean, you start find yourself rooting for this kid. And some of this stuff is absurd and over the top and unbelievable, but it's still kind of sweet. Lisa Kudrow plays in it, and she's his aunt, he idolizes her because she auditions on Broadway. She's not famous or anything. She lives in a crappy apartment in Queens. But to him, that's the dream, you know, working in Broadway, even if she's working in the catering section. But there's a sweetness to it, and there's a real heart to it. And that's what I love discovering in a movie like this, especially when it starts off and I'm ready to turn it off in about 15 minutes. But of course, you know, I get through it partly because I'm a critic. It's my job, but also partly because I know it's not for me. This movie is aimed at other misfit teens and tweens, people who can identify with the character. I did theater, but I also did sports and didn't like that. I did marching band, but I ended up finding my group of friends. And you got to find your people. And this is about somebody finding his people and learning to be comfortable with himself. So there's lessons to be had on this one, but it doesn't bang you over the head with it. And it gets a little silly, and there are parts where you like kind of roll your eyes and you're like, no way that would happen. But you can forgive it because, you know, it's kind of like with The Lost City last week. Channing Tatum and Sandra Bullock were so likable in that movie that you forgave all the stupid parts of the film. All the silliness, all the poor writing. You just kind of gave that a pass because, doggone it, its heart's in the right place and it's kind of sweet. And that's the way I felt with this movie. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it in spite of myself. So I'm going to say Better Nate Than Ever rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Moon Knight and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Rick and Morty season 1-5. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews and finish things up with Moon Knight. This is a new series on Disney Plus. It's the latest in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And here's the thing to note. Morbius is not Marvel Cinematic Universe. Most people don't realize that. They just see Marvel and they're like, ooh, it's a Marvel movie. And it is, but when it says Marvel, especially when it comes out and it says in association with Marvel, that means it's taken a Marvel property that isn't controlled by Disney and Marvel entertainment, and Kevin Feige isn't involved in it. Kevin Feige is the guy who's basically responsible for putting together the Marvel Cinematic Universe, for building these different stories about the Avengers, and then putting together this monstrosity of awesomeness that was the Avengers Infinity War and Endgame. That's Kevin Feige. He knows what he's doing, and he's been working on that stuff for 20 years. What Morbius is, and what Venom and those movies were, those are an association with Marvel. They're a character that comes from a Marvel comic, but the rights are owned by another studio, not Disney. Disney has nothing to do with Morbius. I mean, Kevin Feige can do nothing to stop Sony Pictures from making a terrible superhero movie with Marvel plastered all over it. I know people are making the joke, well, Jared Leto was in the worst DC movie, meaning Suicide Squad, and now he's in the worst Marvel movie, which is Morbius. But it's not really a Marvel movie. It's not in the same universe as the Avengers. Moon Knight is part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It is part of the Disney-owned stuff. And it's going to tie into all of these different pictures and all these different stories. But they take their time. So it doesn't start off with a Iron Man or Thor cameo or anything like that. So let's just look at this as its own little piece of property, but it's a limited series on Disney Plus. I think it's 6 episodes long. Anyways, Moon Knight, a man who works for a museum in London, questions his hidden memories and wonders if he's living a double life with access to an entity that gives him superpowers.
Hello, and welcome to Staying Awake.
I have a sleeping disorder. I can't tell the difference between my waking life and dreams.
Hello, and welcome to Staying Awake.
Yeah?
Oh my God, you're alive. What's wrong with you, Mark?
Why did you call me Mark?
It must be very difficult.
Voices in your head.
There's a lot to bite off in Moon Knight, and they don't put all of that in the one bite in the first episode. This takes its time, and I respect the heck out of it, because you know, you had the Falcon and the Winter Soldier series, and you had the Hawkeye series, and those were very pragmatic, down-to-earth kind of movies. I mean, they're nonsense, you know, super soldier serum and all that kind of crap, but they take place kind of in the real world. And then you have series like WandaVision or Loki, which are really out of the box and very cosmic and magical. And how they fit into everything. Those are the ones I really find interesting. Some of the comics get a little bit out there. They really do. Some of the Marvel stuff, especially from the 60s and 70s, gets really goofy and crazy. So this one falls more in line with the cosmic stuff, but it does start off feeling very grounded and pragmatic. And one of the things it does, and I haven't even really talked about the series yet, but one of the things it does is it allows this to realistically take place in a world where the Infinity War happened and not be like, where the heck were you during it? You know, and that's what they got to answer for every new superhero they introduce. And they had to address that with the Eternals. They're kind of like, wait, where were you when, well, we don't meddle in human affairs. Humanity. I mean, Thanos wiped out half of the universe. That's a huge hurdle that's going to happen with every movie that takes place post-Endgame. And this one, I think, works within that realm because it's about this one guy. And Oscar Isaac plays this guy. And like I said, he has these hidden memories. He has trouble sleeping, and he chains himself to his bed at night. He sleepwalks, but he finds out that he might be living a double life. There might be something, other personality in his body, living another life. And it slowly gives him a look into a larger universe that he's this small shard of, but he's a different facet of that shard, so he can't see what's actually going on. It deals with him in this Egyptology and these ancient gods, and Ethan Hawke plays the antagonist in it, and he's tied up with another ancient god. And actually, he's a great antagonist because he's one of those antagonists that doesn't believe he's doing anything wrong. And that makes the best antagonist. But this is a neat series. And I've seen the first 4 episodes. There's only one available now. But I've seen the first 4. And it definitely reveals more on each episode. And then by the time you get to the 4th one, you know, the ending of the 4th one is the best WTF ending I've seen in a long time. And I think it's really opening up the Marvel Cinematic Universe like the other Disney shows. So I'm really hooked on Moon Knight. It's different, and it doesn't quite feel like a traditional Marvel movie, but that's okay. It's diversifying the landscape, and that's awesome. So Moon Knight totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Rick and Morty seasons 1 through 5 on DVD and Blu-ray. All 5 seasons of this out-of-the-box sci-fi animated series are available, featuring a climax of interdimensional proportions.
Morty, come here.
Police, a strange, horny ocean man is on my lawn.
What are they mad at you for anyway?
Well, we're talking about me. It could be anything. What? Were we blades in that one? That's tight.
Rick, Beth, you love me after all.
I love her. She loves you. Those credits don't transfer.
We're touching Rick's stuff.
Summer, he said no.
Nuh-uh.
Where are we ziplining through futuristic metallic tunnels to?
I came to the Rick and Morty table late because, well, I'll be honest with you. It just seemed like everybody who watched it was a dopehead. I mean, everybody watched it were just smoking weed all day long and watching Rick and Morty. And that just seemed to be everybody who tweeted or said that about Rick and Morty. Like, it's kind of like the thing that anyone who recommends it seems to be like, you're always high. And those are the only people that seem to recommend Rick and Morty. So I ended up having to review it. I did the first 4 seasons last year. And ironically, that's when I broke my rib and I was on pain meds. And I'm like, I got to go take some pain meds and watch Rick and Morty because it's my job. this time I was watching it completely without the opioids involved. And here's the thing with Rick and Morty. I mean, it's an obnoxious show. And at times it really does go for low-hanging fruit. But it also is really cosmic and out of the box. And as much as some of the stuff I think is basal and silly, and just at times crass to be crass, but you know, it's honestly one of the most out there sci-fi things you're going to see in pop culture today. I mean, they were doing multiverse stuff before they started planning that in the Marvel universe. I mean, it really takes the scope of sci-fi and goes there, and they use all of those tools in their toolbox for this 5th season. And it's fun. I mean, you can only take so much of it. I remember I watched all 4 episodes. If I weren't on painkillers, I probably wouldn't have been able to get through all 4 seasons last year. And then this season, you know, the box set, and I think they're just releasing them, the box set as a whole each time. Maybe by the time they get to season 10, they might split it up. But, you know, it still comes on a small case. You can put everything on a disc. You know, there's, I think, 10 episodes there. It does come to a head. It kind of has a season finale. That is, if you've seen it and you're a Rick and Morty fan, it's almost too out there for Rick and Morty. It goes way out of the box and completely explodes, but it also goes way too intimate at times. And it's interesting to see in some of the special features, because they at least have real interviews about making the shows, whereas the earlier seasons, behind-the-scenes stuff are just jokes and stupid stuff, and they just make me annoyed at the people who make the show. But the special features for season 5 are really kind of look at how they created it, because they created this 5th season during the pandemic. So they were doing writer's room on Zoom and they were developing it. You know, I mean, obviously it's all just people on a computer anyways, but they were all doing it at home. And you can see the existential dread that comes through that. Making a show like this in a pandemic situation, some people blossomed and some people were left in a depressive state of mind. And that comes through. So it's an interesting season because there are these little tidbits that probably would not have formed or gelled had it not been done during the pandemic. But I will say it's a neat series and it still has fresh ideas. And I just hope that they can keep going. I find it a really interesting show and I enjoy it in spite of some of the really annoying fans it has. So I'm going to have to say Rick and Morty season 1 through 5 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Also available on disc this week, we've got Sing 2, RoboCop in 4K, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein in 4K, and a new release of Ordinary People, and that's it. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Sonic 2 and Ambulance, and until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.